Hello and welcome to the Badger Talks podcast, the podcast that shares interviews with experts from the University of Wisconsin-Madison community about their work, research, and a little bit about what they're like as people, too. I'm your host, Buzz Kemper. Today, we'll be talking about a balanced trail, how one Wisconsin village is considering mountain biking and ecological integrity. And I'm happy to have as my guests Greg Hall, Judd Blau, and Cooper Rosen. Thank you all for coming in to talk to me about this. I've got Greg Hall, Deputy Director of Public Services for DeForest. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Judd Blau, Village of DeForest, Director of Public Services and Deputy Administrator. You're both?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Multiple hats. We're a small group, but everybody's got different jobs and different roles. So
all right. Terrific. And Chief Bottle Washer, probably.
Sometimes, and you bet.
Yeah, makes sense. And Cooper Rosen, Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies lecturer. Welcome
to the show. Yeah, member of the teaching faculty now. I've been upgraded.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. So member of the teaching faculty. I'll have to update that on my notes. So we're talking about a as yet unnamed mountain bike park that's going to be put in DeForest. And there are a lot of different aspects that you guys have to deal with. Utilities, environment, public concerns, all this stuff. And that's why I'm glad to have all three of you so we can address all this. But I want to start at the beginning. Where did the idea for this come from? Is this driven from DeForest residents who said, hey, we need this? Where did the idea come from? And I'll let anyone address that.
We had a group of intrepid middle schoolers come before the village board probably 7-8 years ago, asking if they could build a mountain bike park in a certain area of town, right?
Okay.
They'd already kind of started to do that on their own without approval.
So, as middle schoolers will do.
Right.
Yeah.
But these kids put together a PowerPoint presentation, came before the board, which is awful difficult even for a grown adult to do. But these kids did this. And we started to explore it at that point. And then COVID happened. And so all kinds of other things shifted around. Right.
Yeah.
So when I came on board, we kind of revived that plan, looked to put it in a certain area. We got a lot of pushback from residents. They didn't want it in that area. Concerns about environmental impacts and whatnot. So we did a impromptu committee, an ad hoc task force to kind of look at what other areas we might be able to put a mountain bike park.
Okay.
And ultimately this land that we have was one of those designated spots. And so we were able to acquire the land from the developer because they couldn't really develop on it because there's wetland components to it.
Okay.
So we got that land and now we're starting to work forward with this, right? So knowing those environmental concerns, that's where we had a great partnership with the University of Wisconsin and the University Alliance to help us come up with, to go through a study process to help make sure we can alleviate those fears of and concerns of residents and also do it in a manner that makes the most sense.
Okay. So this site that you're talking about now, this is not the site that the students originally proposed then?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
How does that change things? Like, I imagine the environmental concerns for a park over here are going to be different than the environmental concerns for a park over there. Did that radically change what the concerns were or what you needed to address, or were they quite similar?
I would say they were kind of similar. The other, where the kids had started their mountain biking area, was actually closer to the homes.
Okay.
And then on a steeper hill. So that had the potential for erosion across the trails, right on our Upper Yaha River walking trail.
Mm-hmm.
And so residents were also concerned of bikers coming down the hill and running into pedestrians walking on the trail.
Okay.
So there's kind of a couple things there. This new park, we would still have the erosion problem, but not as much. It's not as steep of a hill, and we can keep the trail away from the edges of the hill to keep the erosion. I mean, that's where the students showed us where, hey, let's stay away from the edges, and that way we can mitigate the erosion.
Okay. And how large is this park?
It's 16 acres in total.
Okay. Yep. Okay. So how, if one were to map out the trails, what kind of
length are we talking about? Are there 6 miles of trails or 2 or 20 or?
It's a lot of wetland around. So there's 3 knobs okay. that are elevated that have woodlands on it, right? A lot of red pine. Ideally, it should be more of an oak savanna-ish area. So okay. we've got some work to do there. But between those three, I imagine we'll probably get 2, maybe 2.5 miles of trail
okay.
that we can get in there. We actually just had a meeting this week starting to work with Capital Off-Road Pathfinders, which is a group that helps their nicknamed Corp. They okay. build mountain bike trails, or they facilitate that throughout, well, Dane County in the southwestern Wisconsin area. So they can lend us some good professional services at no cost
nice.
And help us flush out how we can best make sure this this park is usable for all skill levels.
Okay, yeah. I was going to ask about that because it seems like someone has invented this wheel before, so there must be some kind of template, even though it can't be universally applied because, you know, obviously every place is different. But yeah, that is a great thing. And I imagine one of the benefits for the city of DeForest is that if you've got kids doing this, you know, pretty aggressive mountain biking, it is not, you know, an easy thing. You're probably preventing some of these kids from doing something that maybe wouldn't be so healthy and wholesome.
Well, we also have a DeForest school district. I don't know if they're part of the school district, a club, mountain yeah. biking club. They're up to like 80 students biking in this club, and they want to volunteer and help build this trail. So,
yeah.
you know, along with that group and then Corp will bring in a bunch of volunteers to help build the trails too. So save the village a lot of money.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that yeah. makes sense. And I want to talk about some of the specific problems that you guys had to overcome. But before I jump into that, I wanted to talk to you, Cooper Rosen. What is the Nelson Institute's role in all of this? And how did you get pulled into this?
Sure. Well, I'm one
kicking
of the
and screaming.
I'm one of the core instructors for our 15-month professional master's program called Environmental Conservation.
Okay.
And it's a professional program which distinguishes it from a traditional academic master's, where students would have a specific focal area and probably conduct some thesis research. In our program, we're preparing students a little more holistically to pursue careers in conservation. So okay. that includes not only natural science aspects like ecology and conservation science, but also social sciences and professional skills and experiences.
Okay.
And one of the core courses for this program is called Conservation Planning. Mm-hmm. This is a course that we recognize should be a required component of the curriculum because of how important planning is to successful conservation outcomes.
Yeah.
So this is a course we offer every fall, and it is really meant to be a real world experience for students. So they not only get the academic side of how to approach conservation planning, mm-hmm. some of the tools and the skills, but they work with a real partner on a real project and spend those several months in the fall delivering a conservation plan that we hope is useful to the partner organization. So in our case, one of our groups in this course worked with the Village of DeForest on this mountain bike trail. And they went to the site a few times. They worked closely with Judd and Greg, and they considered all the different aspects that would go into this. Again, not just the kind of natural science, but the many stakeholders or interested parties involved, the social aspects mm-hmm. of it, and trying to deliver a plan that will fit Village of DeForest needs.
Okay. So your students were involved from pretty much day one then, right?
Well, I don't know how much happened. You know, Jed mentioned that the mountain bike enthusiasts were the originators of this
right.
idea several years ago.
Right.
Our partnership was just this fall course that started in September of last year. So they worked with Jed and Greg for the course of a semester, but they're really just, I think, in the midpoint of this development. They didn't originate okay. the idea. There had been a lot of conversations and planning exercises leading up to it. They delivered, I hope, what is a solid plan and a starting point for the actual work to begin now down the road in preparing this mountain bike trail.
Okay. And how are potential problems identified? Is that something, Judd and Greg, that you guys do, or is it something that people in the neighborhood would come to you and say, hey, we're worried about X, you know, how are you going to deal with that? Where do those concerns, how do those surface? And then what's the process after that between the three of you? Somehow one or two or all three of you then have to address that problem.
Yeah, I would say it would start with, if a resident has a concern, they'll contact Judd or myself or a village board member, and then we'll look at that concern, and then we'll work that into the plan. We'll see if we can mitigate that issue that they're talking about. And a lot of times we can, with mechanically, or, you know, depends on what exactly the complaint is. Okay. Too.
Sorry, Judd. I'm hitting my mic and interrupting you.
No worries. I was just gonna say, the other thing we're gonna do is consult back with the great piece that the university students provided to us. Right. So it was a good, I would say, I call it a blueprint, for what are pitfalls? What are some things that we should look out for?
Right.
What are the areas that they highlighted that are of concern from a ecological standpoint, right? So, these are invasive species. We want to clear those out, right? But if other people are concerned about red pines, we can address how we're going to work through it in a manner that's sustainable for the long term, right? So the red pines only last maybe 60 to 80 years. The red pines that are there are probably 40 to 45 years old, so they've got a limited life left.
Okay.
But we can do some clearing to help the ones that we want to keep, give them more space to grow because they're kind of densely packed in there. So that's, again, this blueprint that the university students provided to us gave us that roadmap, as well as in some other things that we want to consider, like no animals, no dogs in that area, right? To help prevent erosion, and then constant monitoring and just different things like that. So that's the other thing about the balance. So it's kind of, when your first question was, it's kind of a all-encompassing. We can get feedback from any way, any shape or form to help us build this park out.
Yeah, I imagine the lines go all over the place. A concern comes from here, goes to you guys, you know, you might run it by Cooper. Yeah. What are some of the other concerns? So you've mentioned flora and fauna concerns, but what other things did people bring up in terms of concerns of either environmental or noise or anything else? And did anything surprise you that was brought up?
Not a lot of surprises when we hear from residents. It can be, everything. We've got some residences that say they don't want to see anybody over there. They wanted this pristine area.
Yeah.
We actually, it's kind of on the border of our neighbor, the village of Windsor. Homeowners are a little closer to this park, but there's a good wetland buffer zone between them. So I've had to address some concerns from those folks.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that we're really proud of is the Ahara River runs through and kind of starts into forest, right? And that feeds the chain of lakes throughout Madison.
Right.
It was not a healthy river for a long time. And Greg's efforts and the public works staff has done a lot of really good things that it's just recently been rated a class 2 trout stream by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, which means trout are thriving there and able to reproduce on their own.
So that's a big upgrade.
Yeah. It had never been a trout stream before, so the fact that it is that, and hopefully we'll get designated up to a class 1 here in the relative near future. So it's a very healthy, clean river, and so that's, we don't want to further affect that, right? We've been doing our part to make sure that it's cleaned up, and so when we put this park in, we want to make sure that we're not causing erosion or other contaminants, phosphorus, to run into the river and cause issues either in our community or downstream into our, the greater Madison area.
That makes sense. So when concerns arise, then I imagine that Greg and Judd, you guys are probably the first ones to hear about it. The residents will say, I'm concerned about, X. I'm concerned about, let's say, runoff into the river. Then do you guys just deal with that? Do you then coordinate with Cooper and say, hey, can you and your students help out? I'm just wondering how the lines of communication go with all of this.
So it'll probably start, we'll either hear from the residents, or more likely the board members might hear from the residents, right? Because that's who has the ultimate authority, what's happening here. Mm-hmm. Again, I think our time with the university students that we had in this in this cohort is done, right? So they provided us a great blueprint for us to utilize.
Right.
I think a lot of those students are back into their professional careers or off doing other things, right? So, okay. I mean, maybe we could email them and ask, but we could always continue our, we've got another extended time here with the University Alliance. So if there are other things that we need to bounce off of, we could maybe create another cohort and reach out to Cooper and his team to see if there's that kind of stuff.
Okay. What, Cooper, what's, if anything, what's surprised you about this or seemed unique about this this particular project and its specific set of challenges?
I don't know that I was particularly surprised, but I was very pleased that I think this is a case where there really is a win-win for recreational and public use value, but yeah. also for conservation value.
Yeah.
So Judd mentioned that this is an area with a lot of red pine, which doesn't have particularly high conservation value. But there are a lot of there are a lot of big big mature trees there, like big oaks. There's a lot of great native understory vegetation like viburnums, but there are also a lot of invasive plants, particularly buckthorn, and that's not a surprise to anybody. If there's a property that is not actively managed, you're going to get buckthorn on it, whether it's someone's backyard or a property like this. And so that's where this win-win can come in. I think the student's perspective, like in medicine, was first do no harm. Let's make sure we're not going to make this property worse by creating a system of mountain bike trails on here. So they were concerned with erosion and they were concerned with effects on wildlife. They did a rapid survey to assess what was there to begin with. Mm-hmm. But then they realized, well, this is a site that if managed, whether that's for mountain biking or some other way, mm-hmm. is simultaneously going to create recreational value for the mountain bike users, but also clear out all that buckthorn and create the opportunity, as Judd described, to have a more valuable, from the conservation perspective, property that maybe is a little more towards an oak savanna, which is what a lot of restorations are focused on. So any more interest and engagement from Village de Forest and from the public is probably actually going to enhance conservation value in this property rather than detract from it. And it also highlighted for me how important public education is. And I've seen that over and over again with natural areas, particularly really public-facing ones. UW Arboretum is another great example, where the public want to see green space, and they don't necessarily care what that green space is. They don't have the same vision that, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking about here.
Right.
So they see green and they think that's green and that's nature and I want to keep it there. I don't want to see any of those things damaged. And that's where public education comes in, and we can really explain actually what we're doing is enhancing the conservation value here. And maybe we're removing some of these plants, but we're going to replace them with something else, and we're going to replace it with something that has more ecological value, and it's creating this great recreational value.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm glad to see a mountain bike park that lives by the Hippocratic Oath, by the way.
That's the goal.
We should all be doing that. What was this property before, by the way? I forgot to ask that. What who owned it? Who controlled it?
So, well, previous owners were the development group. Parktown Development owned the property.
Okay.
And then they gave it to the Village of DeForest. And prior to them owning it, it used to be farmed. There was actually old bridges across the river, concrete bridges, and you can see the foundations of those in the river yet.
Okay.
So it was farmed, and then about 40 to 50 years ago, they planted it into red pines and forested it.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So did the city then have to purchase the property, or was it donated?
It was donated.
Really,
we worked with the development. So that development group has built Conservancy Place out in the, the southwest corner of DeForest, tucked along kind of by the interstate. So this was an area that's east of the river. Again, it's a lot of wetlands, so those knobs you can't really get to without disturbance of that. So you're not going to be able to put a home or anything out there.
Right.
So, we said, hey, we'll take that if you want to give it to us, because we can use it for parkland. It's a natural native a natural resource area that we would have. And then we can do some of this mountain biking, you know, and it not only will be a mountain biking, but there'll be you can walk. So the mountain bike course will go one direction, but mm-hmm. you could walk it going the opposite direction. So, you know, pedestrians and mountain bikers can coexist in there and get a feel for that space, but kind of get in touch with nature.
Oh, okay.
Without having to go too far outside of town.
So hikers can kind of use it too, as long as they don't get run over. But
yeah, so one would go, the bikers would go one direction, the walkers would go the other.
That makes sense, yeah. Right. Okay, so you can
see a lot of signage.
Each other. Okay, so then the most important question, which of the three of you gets to go dig out all the buckthorn?
So, well, I was going to bring that up next. So actually the Village of DeForest manages all, we have probably over a little over 300 acres of natural areas and probably a couple hundred acres of stormwater basins that we manage. And we have Quercus Land Stewardship that helps us manage all that. Okay. So we control it by burning and then also cutting the buckthorn and honeysuckle down and in and along the Yahar River basins. And that's actually Quercus has started in this section a little bit removing buckthorn already. So
okay,
yeah, it's we're looking forward to it, and they're pretty excited that we got this property, and because they love to see that buckthorn gone.
Yeah, we've got a lot of again interested parties to help, right? So the mountain biking group will we actually started working with Trouts Unlimited. So they've helped us come in. They just did a massive cleanup again in last weekend, and they did one in the fall with us where we probably cleaned up, I don't know, 200 yards, 300 yards of honeysuckle, buckthorn, and opened that up and cleaned that out, right? So it was a great partnership. These things have kind of opened up doors for us to find good collaborative opportunities that are people that are also interested in the ecology of the river,
which seems like it's going to be good for the project, because anytime you get a number of different people who have some skin in the game, then you know they're invested in it, and it's going to make it more valuable to them, even if they're not mountain bikers. Yeah, that's very cool. What's the? I know that these things are always very fluid, but what's the estimated completion date for this bike park?
So we're just into the planning stages right now. Yeah. So maybe next year we can start to put some actual movement into it and get the plans developed out and potentially even start carving some of those trails in 27. But I would imagine maybe by 28 it might finally be available to be open and used enough. We have to get some, there's some DNR things we have to get across to get through wetlands. We'll have to put some boardwalks to connect these three bulbs to get to, because you're just not going to go biking through a sedge meadow or wetland area, so we want to protect those, and that's an expensive process, so there's grants and other things we have to go forward and get as well,
and working with the other municipality, if we want to get access from their side, we'll have to collaborate with Village of Windsor as well.
That makes sense. If Windsor kind of on board?
Well, we haven't really brought it up to him yet.
Okay.
So we hope so.
Okay. All right. Go Windsor. Yep. All right. Very cool. Gentlemen, what have I missed? What should we know about this mountain bike park, or the planning of it, or the collaboration between the three of you that I just haven't gotten to the right question?
I would say we're pretty lucky to be in proximity to the University of Wisconsin, and the program that they put forward with the University Alliance has really, we've probably done, I don't remember.
Six or seven.
But I think village-wide, I think it might even be up to 12 or 13 different programs, right, where we've got to tap into young minds that have a lot of good, fresh ideas, right, and they've got some structure behind them if they've got a professor like Cooper who can help guide them and really make sure they're on the right path to put forth these good plans for us, right? So that doesn't go unnoticed by me that we have that opportunity, because not a lot of it saves us a lot of money, right? If we had to go out and hire somebody to do this for us, it'd be thousands and thousands of dollars. So
yeah, that brain trust, that's a great resource. And I've spoken to other people from University Alliance about other topics that we've covered here on Badger Talks, and I should make clear to the listeners to this program that it's UNIVERCITY. So it sounds like university, but it's kind of university alliance. And by the way, is the Nelson Institute, is that part of that, or what's the relationship between the Nelson Institute and university?
University Alliance is a sort of umbrella program, and they have partnerships across campus. So we're just one of the units that feed into these partnerships, and we're always looking for opportunities, particularly for this conservation planning course, where we know we need to find the local partners. Mm-hmm. But we have other collaborations with them regularly. So that's just what they do is, as Jed described, take expertise, knowledge, interest, work at UW-Madison and kind of export it to the community around us.
Okay. All right.
Terrific. And it's a broad spectrum of students, right? They're from all over the U.S. and even international students who are involved in this project, right? So it's great to get that feedback and solicitation from them.
Well, and these students have brought a lot of great ideas, too. It's things that we never thought about. So bringing their knowledge in.
Yeah, I take very little credit myself. As I said, with great partners like the Village of DeForest and with great students, I could kind of just sit back and watch them take over and do a great job.
That's great. That is terrific. One final question, just because I just kind of want to know a little bit about you guys outside of this work that you do. What's your free time look like? Do you have hobbies, sports? What do you like to do? Cooper, I'll start with you.
I have two young kids.
You have two young kids, so there is no hobbies, no nothing.
No time for anything.
No time for no sleep.
Well, they're not that young. They're 7 and 9, they're a great age to be doing all the kind of stuff we're talking about. I mean, they're bikers. I'm sure once the mountain bike trail is up and running, we're going to go out there and use it.
Sweet.
They love getting out into natural areas. We love camping every summer. We're all over the state and state parks. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to instill in them the types of things I talk about in the classroom, which is love of nature, appreciation, care, conservation.
Yeah. Great. Makes sense. Judd?
Outside of this, I actually play in bands. So I have a band that we record in Nashville and put out our own original country music.
Terrific.
So we play around Wisconsin and have a lot of fun with that. So that's my... That's
awesome. What's your instrument?
I play the bass guitar in that band. But previous band, I played rhythm guitar, a classic country band. So.
Okay.
But it's fun. It gives my creative opportunity to explore itself and whatnot. So
I can relate. I've got a band as well. It's really fun stuff. What's the name of the band?
Crosstown Drive.
Yep. All right. Good deal. Greg, what about you?
Yeah. So my free time, I'm also on the DeForest Windsor Fire Department. So I spend a lot of time over there. But I also enjoy hunting, fishing, all things outdoors.
Yeah.
Woodworking. Anything to do with trees, I like. We have a sawmill, and my buddy's got a sawmill actually. So we cut lumber and
use. How many gallons of sap did you just boil down two weeks ago?
So
do you make syrup?
Yeah, we make syrup. We actually built a sap shed out of the lumber I cut. This winter actually, and then we made 11.2 gallons of syrup this year. So 670 gallons of sap we evaporated.
Okay.
That is about a week's worth of evaporating for us.
So. Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing like the real deal. I mean, first time I tasted real syrup, I thought, oh yeah, okay, this corn syrup crap is like gotta go. This is not.
It's actually healthy for you. It's kind of like honey. It's got a lot of really good natural benefits,
phytonutrients.
Yeah, one of the things that really surprised me the most when I found this out about syrup and honey is that they can both help with allergies, because you're basically giving your body the stuff that your body might otherwise be allergic to, but now your body kind of gets used to it, and apparently it helps people with allergies, which I think is awesome.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Greg, are you refined enough to prefer certain species of maple, like sugar maple, or are you just whatever?
Let's get into the weeds on maple syrup. I like it.
Yeah. So we've got sugar maples and red maples on my property. So either are fine.
Yeah.
I don't have a... doesn't matter to me.
Okay. It's not like wine. It, like, you got to have a 1962 red maple vintage.
Yeah. No.
Listen, it was delicious syrup. I enjoyed it on my pancakes.
Right, exactly, exactly. And the pancakes don't
care. It is so good, though. Yeah, it is.
Terrific. Oh, man. Thank you guys all so much. Greg Hall, Deputy Director of Public Services for the Village of DeForest. Is that the correct title?
Yep.
Judd Blau, Village of DeForest Director of Public Services and Deputy Administrator.
Yep,
am I saying that correctly? Great.
Thanks for having
and,
us.
And Cooper Rosen from the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies.
That's right.
Professor with that group. This sounds really cool, and I'll look forward to seeing the progress. You guys are obviously going about it in a smart way and taking care of problems now that won't bite you in the rear end later. I like it.
Yeah.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to the Badger Talks podcast. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Greg Hall, Judd Blau, and Cooper Rosen. Please browse our previous episodes for other topics that may be of interest to you. The Badger Talks podcast is a creation of UW Connects and produced at Audio for the Arts Recording Studio in Madison, Wisconsin. Our music is composed by Bill Purdy and performed by the UW Marching Band. Our engineer is Stephanie Benicek. I'm Buzz Kemper. Thank you for listening.